This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin is back in the news after reports emerged that he had requested the use of a military jet to fly him to Europe for his honeymoon. The former Goldman Sachs banker apparently didn't see a problem with spending $25,000 per hour of taxpayers' money to fly a jet for personal use. His new wife, Louise Linton, in August also garnered attention for Instagramming her designer clothing in a photo of herself disembarking from a military jet and then chastising a critic publicly, saying her trip was not for personal reasons. And earlier in September, Donald Trump himself was the focus of a new and troubling report that found wealthy executives with government contracts flocking to Trump's golf courses to gain access to the executive branch directly. Trump personally benefits from membership fees. Most recently, Politico discovered that the Office of Government Ethics decided quietly to end a policy prohibiting White House staffers from accepting anonymous donations from lobbyists to their legal defense funds. There is speculation that the policy reversal may be helping staffers pay attorneys over the Russia-related investigation. Has there ever been a president around whom so many questions of ethics violations have emerged so thick and so fast? Joining me to help answer some of those questions is Stephen Spaulding, Chief of Strategy and External Relations with Common Cause. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Thank you so much, and I'm really happy to be here.
So let's first talk about Steven Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and what has emerged, these reports that he requested. I understand that it didn't actually happen, but he requested the use of a military jet to fly him on his honeymoon to Europe, a very expensive trip had it gone through. How do you respond to this? Is this sort of unprecedented to have this kind of request? And isn't it horribly expensive?
Well, so far as I know, this is unprecedented where you have, you know, what's not unprecedented is a Goldman Sachs executive as Secretary of the Treasury. We've had a long history of Wall Street executives taking that government position. But for the most part, I think, at least when it comes to some of the trappings of being a regulator and a cabinet official, they accept that there are certain norms for public officials. And that does not include using government aircrafts to the tune of $25,000 an hour to go on a honeymoon over to Europe on the other side of the pond. So it's troubling. The way the process is working, though, the Office of the Inspector General, which is the internal sort of ethics watchdog, the internal watchdog who looks at processes and makes sure that officials within the department are following the rules, and they are generally more independent than other political appointees, is looking into this. So that's a good move. But this is yet another kind of stain, I think, on Mnuchin's leadership. We know earlier there have been questions about whether he used government aircraft to go take in the solar eclipse, or was he really going to Kentucky, which was in the totality zone a couple weeks ago? Was he really going there to talk about tax policy, as he said? So a number of troubling allegations that I think should have taxpayers concerned.
And then this came only a few weeks after, about a month after his wife, Louise Linton, was in the middle of controversy. She had posted an Instagram of her, post of herself disembarking from a U.S. military jet and hashtagging all of the designer, you know, bags and pieces of clothing that she was wearing at the time. And then when somebody posted back, "Glad we could pay for your little getaway," she hit back saying, "Oh, did you think this was a personal trip? Adorable. Do you think the U.S. government paid for our honeymoon or personal travel?" Of course, in hindsight, this is a very interesting response, given that her husband did ask for the U.S. government to pay for travel for their honeymoon.
Right. No, I mean, the whole thing is really getting a little bit absurd. So I hope that the inspector general is going to be able to get to the bottom of this. As you said, the good news is it appears that the request was denied or withdrawn, and he ended up not taking that trip. But the fact of the matter is that request was made in the first place, apparently, which is, again, I think, troubling. So when it comes to cabinet officials' spouses, you know, generally That's not something that the rules always, you know, reach to. But we know that this has become a pattern, I think, of a number of administration officials mixing business, mixing sponsorships. As you mentioned, a number of those hashtags on that Instagram account were for luxury brands and luxury designers, albeit she is not herself within the administration. But again, I just think this is really pretty unseemly and something that really bothers a lot of Americans that expect their elected officials to be, you know, playing by the rules and not abusing the taxpayer dime.
And of course, I mean, there's the issue of ethics violations, and then there's also just the crassness of it all, which is, I suppose, a separate issue. You know, she was traveling to Kentucky, one of the poorer states in the nation, and showing off about her wealth. it just seems that you would expect these wealthy elites who have so much power to not flaunt it so much in our faces, in the faces of the U.S. public, but this administration doesn't seem to have much shame. Let's go to the way in which Donald Trump himself seems to be personally benefiting from being president. There have been many questions since his presidency began about officials or heads of state from other countries and anybody who wants to curry favor with him, wanting to, for example, stay at the Trump hotels in Washington, D.C. and other parts of the country. Now, there was this report by USA Today that found that they sort of looked at how many executives of companies that have federal government contracts have memberships on Trump's golf courses. And these memberships apparently personally financially benefit Trump. Tell us a little bit about this report and what you think is highly problematic about it, even though it's obvious. We should spell it out.
Absolutely. And I mean, this was credit, hat tip to USA Today, which really did some real shoe leather reporting here. But in scouring websites that amateur golfers use to post their handicaps and a number of other golf-related discussion boards, these reporters at USA Today were able to piece together that about 50 business executives and 20-plus lobbyists, and those business executives represent and head companies with contracts with the federal government. So this, you know, 70 or so people have all joined Trump golf courses in Virginia and in New Jersey and in Florida, where they're able to pay a fee to access these Trump golf courses. And what was really interesting about the reporting is that they were able to put together, at the time the president had visited these golf courses already, you know, 53 times while he was president of the United States, when someone on that list, about two-thirds of the people on that list, were at one of those golf courses. So what does that mean? It means that those with business before the government and other wealthy individuals are able to put up cash, join the club, and have after-hours access to the president of the United States to be able to curry favor with him, to have conversations with him, to let the president know that they are in his circle and that they that they're you know, essentially paying him money. What's also disturbing here is we know that the president has refused to divest from his businesses. And so he is still making a profit off of this. He is still benefiting himself in a way that is really unprecedented. What's not unprecedented is that we have a remedy for this, would be total, which would be, you know, total divestment. But as you said, the golf courses are another example of a Trump property really being the place to wheel and deal. The Trump International Hotel right here in Washington, D.C., down the street, has really become a playground for lobbyists, Republican Party officials, and others who want to have access to the president. And it is the subject of at least three lawsuits because it is currying favor, we think, in violation of the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which prohibits the president from taking emoluments, including money from foreign governments.
The USA Today investigation on the golf courses exposes that exposed how many executives are there said this review shows that for the first time in U.S. history, wealthy people with interests before the government have a chance for close and confidential access to the president as a result of payments that enrich him personally. It is a view of the president available to few other Americans. It's amazing to me that his own base doesn't see this as problematic. If we just substitute Trump for Obama, I can only imagine the absolute outcry. In fact, Trump himself criticized Obama for playing golf while he was president, but I think he might have been playing golf more often during his short tenure as president than Obama did, at least in a whole year, if not a whole term. And then these membership fees, by the way, Stephen, they run into, it's at least $100,000, or maybe even $200,000 to join, right? That's a lot of money.
That is exactly right. Far more than an average American family makes in a year. And we saw at Mar-a-Lago, the president's resort in Florida, after he was elected, the initiation fees at Mar-a-Lago doubled from $100,000 to $200,000. And he's been conducting business at this place, Mar-a-Lago. We filed a complaint at Common Cause because the State Department was promoting Mar-a-Lago on State Department websites. You know, this is a private facility, again, that is facilitating these sort of transactions and is closely associated with the president because he owns it and he's benefiting personally. So again, really unprecedented. There is a bill pending in Congress. Let me tie this a little bit to the public's right to know, because this really should be a nonpartisan issue as far as a Common Cause is concerned, and I think most Americans are concerned. We think the president needs to put country before party and his own profits. President Obama instituted one of the most robust disclosure regimes and practices, where anytime someone accessed the White House to have a meeting, that information would be disclosed. Not necessarily what the meeting was about, but Americans had a right every quarter to review. It was put up on the White House website to see what lobbyists and other interests were getting through the gates.
So the White House visitor logs were made public, yeah.
Were made public.
The visitor log, exactly. The visitor logs were made public. The Trump White House repealed that policy. There is now a bill pending in Congress that Senator Udall has put forward called the Mar-a-Lago Act, which would reinstitute that visitor log disclosure policy, but would also apply it to Trump-owned properties so that if people aren't having their meetings at the White House, but they're having them at the golf course or they're having them at Mar-a-Lago, that information would be disclosed so long as the purpose of the visit includes, you know, business.
Right. So the visitor logs of Trump's properties, golf courses and hotels are private. They're kept secret. And that's why USA Today had to piece together this information, doing some good investigative work. But this bill would, if it passed, were to would make it public. Anybody who visited these properties, of course, you know, Trump would have to sign it into law, and he probably wouldn't. So, but I suppose it would put him in an awkward position of saying he's going to keep them private.
I think that's right. It would have to be signed by the president. And of course, if he were to veto it, the House and Senate could override that. I do think, again, to the point about, you know, transparency as I would hope a basic value of the democracy that we aspire to be. So to have people go on record in the House and Senate and say, no, we don't think these records should be made available, even though they were previously made available, would be really disturbing. And I think there would be a campaign, I would hope, a bipartisan campaign to maybe override that kind of a veto. But we need to see action on that first. But it's terrific that reporters are telling this story. It seems like it's a drip, drip, drip. Every day there's a new example of the president profiting. Just today, it was revealed that the government had to pay the Trump property at Mar-a-Lago more than $1,000 to reserve a room there for two nights. I mean, this just adds up again, we think, to one of the most corrupt presidency, at least for the first year of a presidency that we've ever seen before.
Let's also talk about the other news that just came out in the Office of Government Ethics. And this was the office that the head, Walter Schaub, who had been appointed under Obama, famously resigned from. He, you know, went public about what he saw very clearly in the beginning of the president's terms as potential violations of ethics rules, and then, you know, publicly and quite prominently resigned. So we find now that the Office of Government Ethics decided to end this policy that had been in place for a long time that prevented White House staffers from getting contributions from lobbyists to their legal defense funds. So I had to sort of parse this whole story for it to make sense. So there are White House staffers that have legal defense funds, meaning funds that are been put in place to pay for their legal costs if they are under any kind of investigation. Explain what the overturning of this rule means.
So, and I should say there have been a lot of mixed signals even today and a lot of confusion that really needs to be clarified. Okay. But if we know that there are a number of White House officials that's been leaked, currently serving, who are witnesses and maybe themselves under investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller, who has been charged with investigating Russian interference and any ties to the Trump orbit. So as you said, officials, so that they don't pay out of their personal pocket, sometimes set up legal expense trust funds that can pay for those legal bills. It's been the practice for decades that individuals serving in the government cannot solicit contributions to these defense funds from lobbyists. And certainly cannot solicit funds that are donated anonymously. The Office of Government Ethics has signed off, put out a memo back in 1993 that didn't really settle the question, but said, yeah, under certain circumstances, anonymous contributions could be acceptable. That was a bad decision. The former OGE director, Walter Schaub, made that clear earlier this year that that decision was not binding and certainly was not OGE practice. OGE practice was to say that no, anonymous contributions from lobbyists were not permitted. There was a header literally on top of that memo that was changed just a few months ago on OGE's website and weeks ago. And it turns out that Trump officials had been consulting with OGE potentially to figure out a way to allow those setting up legal expense trust funds to take anonymous donations. OGE just last night, a spokesperson said, no, a lot of confusion here. That is not our practice and policy. But yet that still is up on the OGE website. There's confusion here. Common Cause joined with a number of other watchdog organizations and ethics leaders to say OGE needs to make this very clear with a formal policy that those in government cannot accept anonymous contributions from lobbyists to fund their legal expenses. So we call on OGE to take that step. If it's true that they've maintained that policy, they need to clear up the confusion and adopt something more formal and clear to make that abundantly obvious to anybody who needs to ask the question.
So that story is still developing and we'll follow it certainly. Well, let's end our conversation talking about where all of this could come to a head. I mean, it feels, you know, members of the public might be feeling helpless watching these potential ethical violations, the sort of flaunting of the public trust just unfold before their eyes continuously. And almost all of it, resolving it, seems to lie in the hands of the very people that are doing this, you know, members of the Republican Party or those people aligned with Trump himself. Are the lawsuits by groups like yours one of the few ways in which we can get accountability for these potential violations without having to rely on the very people doing the violating?
So a few thoughts on that. I would hope that our co-equal branch of government, the judiciary, will uphold the law. As you said, there are scores of lawsuits that have named the administration as defendants, the president himself dealing with all kinds of ethical violations, as I said earlier, accepting emoluments, FOIA litigation, a number of documents that are being withheld or overly redacted. So certainly we have to look to the courts to uphold the rule of law, but we really need citizens to stay engaged. That is one of the only ways out of this. And so organizations like mine, like Common Cause, we are working to give people the tools to participate, to make their voices heard. One place, if I can make a pitch, is for folks to go to countryoverparty.cc, where you can see our plan to ensure that standards of high ethical standards are upheld and promoted. Folks can call their legislators, let them know that we're paying attention. If your state doesn't make it easy, for example, to participate in our elections, call on your legislators and work to advance automatic voter registration, for example. If your state at the local level, where a lot of this action is, doesn't have strong ethics rules or an ethics commission even, in a number of states they lack those, get involved. That is, I think, the only other way out. We can look at the courts for concrete solutions, but we need citizens to stay engaged. I think if there's one bright spot in all of the tumult that we are experiencing, it is that civic engagement has been accelerating. And I hope that it will continue to accelerate as we move into the 2018 midterms and ultimately to the next election, which is a little over 3 years away. So don't get down. That's a victory for those that want to continue to sow division and disrespect for our democratic values. And stay engaged and participate.
And Stephen, is there any institution that's keeping a database, a publicly accessible database of all of the potential ethics violations and, you know, potential sort of bribery and corruption sort of impressions that we're getting from the Trump administration? Would be, you know, they're coming so thick and fast, it's hard to keep track.
That's right. I know that journalists are doing a terrific job of that, and some of our partner organizations that I can't name off the bat just because I don't want to misstate them. But I know that certainly Common Cause, our allies at the Sunlight Foundation, at Public Citizen, at CRU, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, we are all working to compile this information and make it readily accessible and take action and provide the tools for Americans to take action as well. But as I said, I believe The Atlantic as well is keeping a strong list of all of these violations as they come up pretty much every single day.
Wow. Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post links to Common Cause and the other website you mentioned from our site later. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
My guest is Stephen Spaulding, Chief of Strategy and External Relations with Common Cause. And we've been discussing the many, many questions of ethics violations around Trump and his staff and cabinet. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.